Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. Here, hosts John Golia and Greg Fife, two of the world's most respected aviation experts, talk about all things aviation safety. This podcast is brought to you by PAMA, the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, and Avemco Insurance, a world-class provider of aviation insurance. Get a customized quote at avemco.com or give them a call at 888-241-7891. Now it's time to buckle up because it's wheels up on the latest episode of Flight Safety Detectives.
Well, hello, my friend. It's another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. We are coming off of a holiday weekend, and as you can see from my background, I am not in my office. In fact, I was out in the woods for 5 days chasing Bambi and Yogi. They seem to be able to elude me this year, which really didn't make me happy, John.
Well, I was up in Western Massachusetts, and I saw a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, well, why didn't you call me? Because I would have definitely had a lot better luck up there. I mean, I think all the buck this year up in Pennsylvania decided to go to Vegas, because there were a lot of doe. There just wasn't a lot of buck.
Yeah, it's funny how they can manage to disappear, isn't it?
Oh, they evaporated, trust me. And I sat out there, and, you know, it snowed up in PA. It was cold, so, of course, they bed down and don't move during the day to conserve energy. And, of course, we're not allowed to hunt at night. So, you know, makes a sport out of it for sure. So how you doing? How was the holiday weekend?
Yeah, everything was fine with me. I enjoyed my family for Thanksgiving, and then I just sort of didn't do much. Bounced around a little bit when I should have stayed home fixing my computer, but I just didn't feel like it.
Well, you know, holiday weekends are always a concern for you and me because the accident rate tends to go up over a holiday weekend, whether people are traveling to go visit loved ones or they just figure on a long weekend they're going to go fly around the local area and sightsee with friends and family and that kind of stuff. And we had a number of accidents. And I know that our sponsor, Avemco Insurance, I hope they weren't busy, but.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, because they do insure the majority of general aviation aircraft. And we've had a busy tail end of this year with accidents, and it just doesn't seem any rhyme or reason to them, what's going on. And when you read the preliminary reports, they're really not shedding a lot of light. There's very spotty educational value for anybody that wants to read them and try to get something out of it to improve themselves or improve, you know, discuss and hang a flying sessions. There's just not enough really good information in a lot of those initial reports. And of course, last year we lost the whole damn year with nobody going out for on-scene investigations from the NTSB. So we're going to have a lot of accidents that are probably going to yield very little meaningful data for the accident rate. So our sponsor, Avemco, who is the premier insurance company for general aviation accidents, is going to have their hands full with some of this stuff.
Well, if you don't want to have an accident and you don't think that you qualify for an accident, then definitely give Avemco a call because they want to insure you.
Yeah. Well, I'm impressed, and I've said this over and over, I'm impressed with Avemco and their people and what they do and the discussions that I heard what they had with out at Oshkosh with people flying. They are there to help inform the pilots. That was clear. That one thing that came through loud and clear out in Oshkosh is, you know, and I think I said this previously on the podcast, but their staff runs through flight simulators that they own a simulator in their own building.
Yeah.
So they go up and they fly in the simulator routinely. And you know, not a lot of insurance agents do that around the country. So they're just good people. So if you need insurance, either hull insurance, liability insurance on your GA aircraft. If you're a flight instructor and need insurance, you know, and the big one today that seems to be growing today is rental insurance on, you know, if you're using a club airplane or if you're renting one. A lot of the businesses are not carrying the sky high limits that they used to because of the cost. And, you know, you may not have the coverage you think you have when you rent an airplane. Yeah. So if you rent an airplane to build time, you should look at Avemco's renter policy to protect yourself, your family.
Yep. And as you and I talked on a previous show, I've read more about the pilots that are age 70 and up that are just up in arms right now because they can't seem to get insurance, or if they do, it's sky high. And they're feeling that they're being discriminated against. They say that they can hold a medical as long as they stay proficient and they meet all of the federal aviation requirements. They're concerned with the fact that they're having a hard time getting insurance, and I think that that's one part of the industry, you know, looking at, well, how far does that risk go up, and is it really exponential given someone's age? And I know that you and I have talked to Avemco about it briefly. So if you are in that fourth quarter, if you will, in the age bracket, then definitely give Avemco a call and talk to them and see what they can do for you, because I know that they were receptive to us at least bringing that issue up, and they said, absolutely, we'll talk to them for sure. You know, we don't guarantee anything, just like any other insurance company, but it's definitely worth a phone call. And I mean, look, as long as you have good health and you maintain your currency and proficiency and you meet all the regulations, age is just a number. Because we've seen a lot of accidents and serious incidents with folks that are in the age bracket of 17 up. So, you know, 70 is just a number. And I know a lot of folks that, you know, still want to fly and can fly very well. And they are at that 70 mark and older, but they're sharp as a tack. They fly on a very regular basis. And I think, you know, that in and of itself, because they don't have a lot of the stressors. A lot of these guys that I know are retired, so they can focus on their flying. They enjoy their flying. They pay particular attention to the details, like you always talk about, John, with pre-flight planning and, of course, the pre-flight exercise on the airplane. So, you know, I think that there may be some legitimate beef. Now, everybody has a medical issue in some way, shape, or form. It's not just as soon as you hit that magic number of 70, all of a sudden, you know, you're just a walking time bomb for medical issues. Because again, these medical issues, no matter what they are, can show up, you know, from the time you start flying at 17, you know, on up. So I think that, and again, fortunately, I'm not close to that magic number yet. But John,
you'll get
and Dirt. I mean, come on, I think you're well over that number.
That's what I said. I made aviation safer when I stopped flying.
Yeah, but the sad thing is that while we're talking about that, this was a holiday weekend. I was in Pennsylvania, and not too far from where I was, there was a Cessna 210 that crashed that ended up being a fatal accident. There was another Looney accident that I caught wind of. There was a Cessna 310 accident. You know, there were so many fatal accidents, and we see that escalation during these holidays. And I know from COVID last year, you and I talked about the fact that, you know, people are now getting back out. You're always preaching it on the show, and people want to go visit relatives, but that window is real short. You know, they have to be here and they have to get home because they have to go back to work or whatever. And there's a lot of self-induced pressure put on these folks to accomplish the mission, even if the mission shouldn't be flown because of weather or, you know, just, you know, physiological things like fatigue. You're not feeling well. You're kind of sick. But you're trying to please yourself and the family because, you know, you planned this trip, you haven't seen your relatives because of COVID, and this is an opportunity. But a number of these accidents, it's obvious that these folks shouldn't have been flying, not in the conditions they were flying.
You know, got to push it. Got to get there. Got to get there. You know, get it in itis. We're going to get this airplane in, you know, in spite of the weather. You know, when the time of the year, we got a lot of icing going on today. How many people have refreshed themselves with their airplane and icing and what they need to do? You know, if you start building ice, do you climb your way out of it? Do you jack the speed up a little bit to try to shed it? I mean, there's lots of tools that you can use, but you got to understand them. And you need to definitely not let your airplane get iced up and heavy, because then you're not going to fly.
And you just brought up a good point, John, with regard to determining, you know, the natural logical progression. If you pick up ice, is you're going down. And if you go down, you know, is the temperature actually going to be warmer and start shedding that ice? Well, in a lot of cases, you know, climbing is the better option. And that's why it's so important that when you do your pre-flight planning, especially of the weather, that you're looking at freeze levels, you're looking at inversions, temperature inversions, and things like that in the areas that you're going to be flying in. Because, you know, yeah, you may not be able to climb like a bat out of hell to get out of the icing, but if you can, you know, get a rate of at least 100 or 200 feet per minute and milk the airplane up out of those conditions into a warmer air mass above the clouds or whatever, you know, that may be the reasonable option. The other thing is, of course, along your route of flight, you should be looking for plan B and plan C. If you get into icing conditions and you need to get the airplane down and you need to put it on the ground, you better have a suitable airport close by, or at least, you know, along your route of flight. And a lot of times, you know, if you know you're going to have icing or the potential for icing, even if your airplane is FICI, or that is, it's certified for flight into known icing, maybe you change your flight instead of going, you know, point to point direct. You zigzag a little bit. It's, you know, only going to add 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes, but maybe you want to, you know, flight plan a route that puts you in close proximity to decent airports that if you have to put the airplane down, you can bail out relatively easy.
You know, and that's something I'm not hearing at the FBO. You know, we've had all kinds of crazy weather up here in New England, and it was spotty. You know, it was snowing in Western Mass and over towards Albany, but it was sunny here in the eastern side of the state, right? And then it sort of changed, just the opposite. So the weather's crazy, but I'm listening to guys in the FBO talking about going flying, and I still hear too many of them talking about the weather at destination and not saying a word about what's in the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weather en route is very important. You know, in fact, most of the time it's more important than what you're getting at the
destination. I was just going to say that is a very, very valid point, John. It's the stuff in the middle, not at each end.
Yep. A lot of airplanes have gone down because of the middle, what's in the middle.
Yeah.
Including mountains, flying into them into clouds. And, you know, it's just aviation is risky and you want to lower your risk. And you do that by going by the numbers.
Yep.
Pre-plan your flight. Right? When you get to the airport, you do it all again, essentially, because you should be looking at it before you leave your house.
And I was just going to say, the time, you know, you don't want to be trying to read, you know, METARs and TAPs and everything else in route, you know, for all sorts of destinations. I mean, you want to pre-plan, you want to plan that route, but, you know, you want to have suitable places to bail out to. That's the METARs that you want to monitor. That's the TAP you want to monitor. And if you pull up their local AWOS or ASOS information and monitor it as you're progressing, those are the ways to stay informed. But to wait until that happens because you chose not to do it, you wanted to get off the ground, you're in a hurry, and now all of a sudden you're fumbling around with an iPad while the airplane's trying to fly somewhere, even if you got all the whiz bang stuff sitting in the front end, that airplane still expects you to be the pilot in command and point it in the direction it's supposed to go. And a lot of times, and I'm seeing this more and more, John, and it's a concern to me. I've got a number of accidents, and you and I have talked about a number of these accidents where the pilot, you know, they have no business really being in the automated airplane they're in, but they know enough to be dangerous, be able to program it, get the airplane in the air, turn on the autopilot, and let the autopilot, let all that automation take over and fly the airplane for them. And again, that airplane is an inanimate object. It has no brain. It's depending on you, the pilot, to tell it what to do and when to do it. And so, you know, that's a huge, huge issue that as we get into this, deeper into this winter season, I'm afraid we're going to see more and more of these types of accidents.
You know what I haven't heard anything of, and I know it's out there, is running out of gas. You know, because the NTSB hasn't been out there doing as many accidents as they have in the past, we just don't see any written record about these airplanes running out of gas. But you know, a percentage of these have to be in that area. So, you know, I think I have enough fuel is not the right thing to say.
Yeah, the little engine that could, you know. Yeah. But again, if this lag in being able to pull up information on these accidents that we know about, you know, it's taken 5 to 10 days before we actually get something. And like you said at the top of the show, the problem is that they don't have a lot of depth of detail. Now, whether that's intentional, I've seen a lot of good prelims come out of the board. You got some good investigators who darn near have written the entire factual report in the preliminary report. And those are great because, like you said, those are tools that we can use now. Those are elements that as a flight instructor or just a pilot to another pilot relating an accident, you go, yeah, you know, the board has said that they didn't find this, they found this, they got an issue with this, and there's no evidence that the pilot may have done this or whatever. That's better served to the aviation community now rather than 18 months from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, because it's all long forgotten and nobody cares.
Yeah, how true. Yeah, you know, in accident investigation, I long believe you have a communications moment. And that's when you have people's attentions in the beginning, you know, a window of time after the accident. People are interested in hearing what goes on. You wait 2 years like the board just stretched out from 1 year to 2 years when they have to get their reports out, which I'm lost for words to even talk.
They just published a Beach Duke accident that I'm aware of that I'm familiar with because it happened out in California. They just published that accident and it's well over 2 years now. And again, you know, what else was going on? They aren't doing as many accidents as they have in the past. They're operating with a $120 million budget, so it sure isn't budget concerns. And these people are working out of their houses. They don't spend a lot of time at the accident site. They show up or they delegate to the FAA and then do the follow-up. So I'm not really sure why it's taking so long. Well, I know why. I shouldn't even say that. I know why. It's called procrastination. Everybody loves to go out on the road and kick tin. The worst part of accident investigation for a lot of these folks, especially those that can't write, is writing the report.
Yes. In fact, I started down a path for some future shows of ours to talk about each segment of the accident investigation. So when the bell goes off, we've talked about that a little bit. You have to be at the airport. You know, if it's a big airplane accident, you have to be at Washington National within 4 hours and so on and so on. But I started to script out, and script too strong a word, just sort of thoughts process of what goes on. You know, you've got to be at the airport to go. Well, what does that mean to each one of the investigators.
Yeah.
Your suitcase, you got lots of things to do. So I was trying to do a detailed meat on the bones life of an investigator that goes on crashes. And I want to walk through the whole thing, and I want to touch on the emotional side of it too, because people think investigators, we're all supermen and all the rest of it. Well, you can only pick up broken airplanes. Most of us love airplanes. When you see an airplane broken, it's painful. But when you have to pick up broken people and be around broken people and find pieces that were missed by the coroner, it eats at you.
Well, I was just in Pennsylvania with a group of friends that they asked me that question. How do I do my job? Not so much the kicking of the tin part, but how do I handle the worst side of aviation? That is the blood and the guts and the victims and the families and all of that kind of stuff. And it does take an emotional toll. And in fact, while I was at the agency, we started having more of an awareness about the psychological impact, the PTS, the post-traumatic syndromes that were happening with investigators. They ended up creating an employee assistance program that afforded an investigator the opportunity. And I remember ValueJet was a real trigger for a lot of people. And so that came about. Now, how I handle it versus the way you handle it or someone else handles it, we deal with it internally. People go, man, you're callous, you're cold, you don't have a heart, you don't have any emotions, you don't do this. You don't know what I do in the dark of the night when I'm by myself. When I'm in front of that camera, I cannot be sobbing. I cannot be crying and talking about how devastated, it was for me to see, because you can't do your job if you have that emotional attachment. And again, they are all tragic when there are victims, whether it's a fatal accident or a serious injury or anything like that. The fact is that in order for an investigator to do their job and do it well, they must not emotionally get attached, but they must be thorough and methodical. You cannot just go to obvious cause. You cannot just write it off. Well, the airplane hit a power line. I don't care about that. That's the worst kind of probable cause I read all the time. Loss of control for unknown reasons. Trust me, there's a reason that pilot lost control. You just got to do your job as an investigator to try and figure it out. You may not get there 100%, but there are a lot of circumstances that could be factually supported. That's called accurate thinking. And the problem is we have an investigative community in the government side that I question, because their thinking is not accurate. And you and I are working a number of cases where it's very obvious that it is not accurate thinking. It's the big red easy button. Come to the obvious cause, write it up, move it off your desk, and move on. And that's a travesty to the agency. And I know that we're going to talk, you're going to read some emails, and somebody just actually mentioned that.
Well, let's go right into that. All right, so there's a young lady named Patty. She says, Greg's all fired up. Great show. So you're already spotting down that path again right now.
Yeah, well, I get a little fired up because I owe my career to Embry-Riddle for putting me in a position to be able to get the job with the NTSB. I owe my NTSB career to a guy named Bill Lamb, who took a chance on a 21-year-old snot-nosed kid coming out of college into a very stoic agency. And I took that very respectfully with a lot of pride, because I was working in an agency where, as one investigator told me on multiple occasions, and I respected him immensely, and that was, son, I've been flying longer than you've been alive. You don't know as much as I've forgotten. And that kind of stuff starts to sink in, John. And I dedicated, and I still do, I give 150% to every accident I work. And why do you think I'm very critical? Because you and I have found shortcomings in these investigations done by others who have that same responsibility, but have shorted the investigation. And the good stuff has been left on the table, not to benefit the aviation community. And I get fired up over it every single week when you and I dissect accidents, and there's a lot of issues that were not developed.
You know, I recently had a discussion with a couple of corporate pilots who frequently fly to Europe. In fact, that's one of their main runs out of here in New England. And we had a discussion about the BEA in France and the AAIB in Britain. And I passed a comment that those folks do excellent investigations, very detailed. They dig in deep, and they actually dig in very deep on general aviation accidents, deep, far deeper than we do. And we had a long discussion about that. And they were pushing back quite a bit about the NTSB being the best in the world. And I'm saying, you know what? The NTSB is just one organization with the rest of the world. And yeah, some guys do an excellent job, and some guys don't do the best job that they could do. And so we had to leave it with, we don't agree, but it was starting to warm up a little bit. But we got an interesting comment from a Robert, and he said, you guys are dinosaurs. Well, I think he's partially true. Yeah, we are dinosaurs.
No. Do not lump me into dinosaur. Like I said, you're as old as dirt, and there's a lot of stuff in that dirt that came from dinosaurs. I'm not that old, John.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to say how old you are, but I know how old you are. You're not a young, you're not that 21-year-old young chicken anymore.
Yeah, well.
You're a tough old turkey.
There you go. Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Us old guys, us dinosaurs, we have a lot of corporate history. We have a lot of corporate knowledge. We are wise beyond our years. And given what's going on in today's world with the aviation safety, acts investigation, I'd rather be me than a new investigator right now who's not doing anything.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, this comment that this Robert put forward, because after he calls us dinosaurs of the NTSB, then he goes on to agree with so much of what we said. Now they don't even show up at halftime. Right? They're glorified bean counters. And the mentality now is just, people are just beans. It's a little bit disconnected here.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he's agreeing the fact that they don't show up for accidents, which we have criticized. They are just bean counters. They really don't get to it. And you and I have talked about how phony statistics could be, especially if you don't do a thorough and methodical investigation. And again, I mean, if you're not going to put 150% effort into every single investigation so that you can get to the root cause and you can have accurate statistics that we in the industry can use and rely upon, then don't leave the office.
Yep. Well, and that might be part of the problem. You know, like you said, they have the budget, but you hear them a lot of times they complain about there's no resources to do the job. But you know what? That may be because the head of, you know, accident investigation is the one who doles out the resources to the investigators. So there may be something in that choke point, if you will, between the money that Congress gives the NTSB, that pot of gold up there, and then it flows down through the division heads. And maybe it's being allocated off with an eyedropper and pushing these people. I think if you took the number of investigators now and the number of accidents that are in work, and I'll, you know, give that credit in quotations, they probably got 40 or 50 accidents per person. Because
that's nothing. When I first started with the agency, all of us were working well over 100 accidents.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, you get 20 and you have too many. And so they, again, they obviously have too many, but and maybe that's why they stretched it out to 2 years, but they're not doing anybody a service. And in fact, I was talking to a, I know what it was. I can't say who it was. But recently the NTSB showed up and did two of last year's accidents, the wreckage inspections on two airplanes in less than 4 hours.
You can't do that.
Yeah, well, they did it.
It is such a disservice to the families and the victims, and of course the aviation community, because you cannot go out there, examine wreckage with the thought of, I just got to get through this to fill the square so I can move on to this other wreckage and get it all done in an 8 hour a day so that I don't have to charge overtime or have to come back here. I mean, again, that's why I have a job in my afterlife. And a lot of times I end up cleaning up someone else's mess because they failed to do a thorough and methodical investigation. And there is, I mean, you and I have talked about it. We've dissected accidents and we've brought up issues with these accidents that were never examined, that we believed were critical, not only to flight safety, but of course, to a proper probable cause. And you know, I know that we're getting emails from our listeners and viewers that tend to agree. You know, some of course don't always agree with us, and that's fine. I mean, I don't expect everybody to agree with us, but again, they're coming from a different perspective. You and I have been there. We've been behind the curtain. We know what the wizard looks like. And so, you know, when it comes to us being critical of the organization, yeah, there are a lot of people at the NTSB that have no use for me. That's fine. I don't care. I just wish they would do their job. All the way to the board members, they sure shoot off their mouth a lot, but I don't see a hell of a lot of action. And again, this is all about saving lives. And I want them, and here's a challenge to them. I would love to see them publish something that says what and how many safety recommendations that have targeted general aviation aircraft have they put out in the last 20 years. And where have they gone? And what did they affect? And how did they improve aviation safety?
Yeah. Yeah, you good luck seeing that.
Yep. Well, yeah. I already
I just like to know. I'd like to know how many requests for reconsideration they have and how aged they are.
Yeah.
I asked that question when I was a board member and I never got a good answer. They put me off for months. And then when I finally did, I found out afterwards that they went on a massive clean them out campaign, answered them all. I never did get an aging report.
Yep. Well, we got a number of other emails. Some of you may have noticed that we're beta testing a new opening. We have a more pleasant voice than John and I when it comes to introducing the show. We're still working on that. We're overlaying, we're picking some music now. We're going to have actually a number of different openings and closings. And to relieve my partner of having to try and memorize Abemco's phone number, which he seems to forget to write on his computer every once in a while.
I memorize it. 888-879-0389. If you need insurance, call Avemco, 888-879-0389.
Yeah, now that you got it memorized, we're going to have someone else do the commercial for us.
That's right. Then they won't forget to say it.
That's right. So, yeah, we are testing a new one. We know that a number of you have given us positive feedback, which is good. We had recorded that original opening when we got the show started, but we're trying to take this show not only on the road, but at least to another level. So we're working on that. We are going to get back into a number of hard-hitting type accident dissections all the way across the board, from the smallest general aviation accident, again, up through the big aircraft accidents. There have been a number of, actually, there have been a number of large accidents in the recent past where the reports are now starting to come out. So John and I are going to be looking at that to see if, in fact, they did a thorough and methodical investigation around the world of these accidents. Because again, John and I are blessed with having connections worldwide that we may know some backstory on these particular accidents that didn't necessarily show up in the front side of that report. So of course, we're gonna be doing that. We love the emails. A number of folks have come back and really appreciated the show that we did about general aviation icing. And the fact that, yeah, this is a good trigger. It's a good, you know, man, I remember talking about that, or I remember learning about that, and it's worked out well as a refresher. And that's all we're trying to do. I'm working two accidents right now involving jets where the pre-flight activities were improper and ended up resulting in damage to both aircraft, which are scrapped. Fortunately, nobody got hurt, but the airplanes were scrapped. And it was all because of what John keeps preaching: do a thorough pre-flight. So, you know, with all of that coming up, you know, we're cocked and loaded. We're going to finish off the year strong and then begin 2022 with some good shows. So you got any more emails, John? I know that we've been rifling through it, and I didn't have internet connection sitting in a tree stand. So.
Well, one of the things that we've got in our emails has been that the show runs too long and they'd like to see it like 25 minutes, and we're well past that now.
Okay, so, then I'm going to shut up. So get us out of this. I'm going to leave you with the last word.
So quickly, a couple things. One is, after the first of the year, you're probably going to see us with a different venue. Still going to be YouTube, but it's going to be an expanded venue. And I'll tease them and saying it's going to be live.
Good.
All right. And that's all I'll say on that right now. But we're going to, this program is going live. And now to get out of this, all right? I want to remind everybody that this program has been brought to you by Avemco Insurance. And if you need liability insurance, power loss insurance, renter's insurance, which you, if you're a student pilot, you should really think about, and CFI insurance or any kind of general aviation insurance, give Avemco a call, 888-879-0389. Avemco.com. Good people. They love to talk aviation. Give them a call. And with that, I will give my last word. As always, when you're going to go flying, please, please, please pre-plan before you leave your house. And do it again when you get at the airport. Look at the weather. Not only point A and B, look at everything in between. All right. It's just frustrating for us to see these accidents that happen over and over for stupid reasons. Let's make them a real accident, not an accident that we know is going to happen.
John, I don't want them to be a real accident. I'm waiting for people to put us out of business.
I love that. I would love to be just out of going around to the accident scenes and well, we'll talk about that stuff another time. All right, so please. And if you do go flying, make sure you do a damn good pre-flight. I'm still working on what makes a good pre-flight.
Good.
Unfortunately, every time I talk to either a pilot or a mechanic, the list gets longer on what makes it. So the boil down is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
And if you do fly, please fly safely.
To listen to more episodes of this show, go to flightsafetydetectives.com or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening, and remember to fly safe.